Hello and welcome to another episode of Tank Nuts. My guest today is one of the directors from the Vickers Machine Gun Collection and Research Association. It's Mr. Rich Fisher. Thanks very much for joining us, Rich. First of all, can you tell us about this? I have to say it was probably pre-COVID now, wasn't it? You kindly invited me up to see the collection. Can you give us a quick description of perhaps what the association is and what the collection's like?
Yeah, so we've got 31 Vickers machine guns in the shed at the moment. Shed's like dumbing it down.
I say
a little
shed,
bit.
It's not a shed at all, is it?
It's not. But you know, we have to keep it a little bit different. And we specialise in effectively just all aspects of the Vickers machine gun. So we specialise in the Vickers machine gun, but our scope is absolutely huge. So we look at it from the British service, like 1912 to 1968, but then all around the world as well. And not just the guns, so it's not just a collection of Vickers machine guns. They do pretty much all look the same. But all the equipment, the transport and stuff that goes with them as well. And you know, we focus on that because really my grandfather was a Vickers machine gunner in the Second World War, and he sparked my interest like 28, 29 years ago to look at this gun. Loads of people perhaps have seen them and understand a little bit about them, but there's so much depth to it that we have this association, and it's a not-for-profit association that owns the collection. And has around 50 members at the moment. We take, we do publishing, we do events, bit of living history. We have the collection that's there on display that you've seen, that people can come and visit. And we just try and get that message across as much as possible.
So it was your grandfather. I was going to ask how you sort of got into this, because it's quite a niche area to get into, isn't it? So it was your grandfather that sparked the interest in the first place.
Yeah, so he served in Italy with the 7th Battalion Cheshire Regiment, which were one of the machine gun battalions in the Second World War. And he sat behind the Vickers at the Royal Marines Museum back in 1994 and took it apart. And it's just like, I was there 11 years old thinking, what's going on? Because he'd never really talked about that aspect of it. He talked about sort of service in Italy and stuff like that in the mountains, and he was at Anzio, so he had talked a bit about it because I'd been interested in military stuff for a couple of years before, but I'd never realized his interest or his memory in the Vickers. 50 years on, he took it apart, and there was this like lost security guard wandering around rather hoping he could put it back together again as well. He managed. 6 months later, I had the opportunity to buy one, deactivated at the time.
I was going to say, the first time I walked in there, I was quite blown away, because I mean, in my role, what I do is, I see museum after museum of vehicles and vehicles and vehicles. But of course, UK, we were talking a bit about this earlier, the UK, we are, I think it's fair to say, pretty strict about gun laws and everything else. I mean, how did you get, you walked into your place and it's just, it looks like an armoury. Well, I suppose it is an armoury.
It is, yeah.
It is an armoury. How does that work then with all the, current legislation and gun laws and...
So we have something that's like commonly known as Section 5. And that's an authority from the Home Office, so not by the local police, but from the Home Office, to possess prohibited weapons. So they are prohibited. Not anybody can have machine guns in the shed. But we, we've gone through a long process to get there, fair to say. I started the association by gifting what I had as a collection to the association back in 2011. And really that journey with a few sort of injects here and there to get firing weapons took around 6 or 7 years from that point. So we had to present good reason. So firearms law in the UK is based on good people, safe place, safe people, safe place, and good reason to have stuff. So we recognise that there is a good reason, and thankfully the Home Office agreed with us on that, that educating and informing people about historic weapons, and specifically the Vickers machine gun in our case, is actually quite, is that good reason. The Vickers featured in so many conflicts around the world, across time, that we can sort of research almost any aspect of military history in doing that. We do work with schools. We do take the machine guns to when schools are visiting some trench systems for part of their year 9 studies. We'll get them in the trench alongside machine guns firing, blank firing. We'll do larger events as well. And, you know, having the guns is a really important part of that. You can do it with just deactivated weapons. I won't ever, you know, say you can't. But enhancing that with the opportunity to fire and learn the technical aspects, the intricacies of firing. And then when we do ball firing as well, so live firing, yeah, we understand so much more as well.
So you can live fire as well?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. And we took 16 Vickers machine guns, well, actually we had a few spare, down to the range at Bisley in July, and we fired 16,000 rounds with 60 people.
Good heavens.
And that was for the anniversary, the centenary of the disbandment of the Machine Gun Corps back in 1922. So we did that event. That's all available to watch. That's, you know, been put out by a few different people now. And that was a really major task. Not only getting like nearly 20 guns together that were functional and safe to fire, getting all the ammunition together. You know, 303 ammunition is not something you can go and buy off, well, you can buy off the shelf, but it's quite a big shelf. 16,000 rounds of, it's not something the local gun shop has. And then training 60 civilians to fire machine guns. You know, that's not something, I would say, out of those 60 people, 10 will have done that before. And actually in really restricted circumstances, maybe 100 rounds, 50 or something like that. But actually to have 1,000 rounds being put through each gun over the space of 45 minutes, with me boring everybody in between, giving the guns an opportunity to cool down perhaps, telling them about the history of the Machine Gun Corps and everything, to an audience of nearly 1,000 people. So that just goes to prove there is that interest in educating and informing people as well.
So I say, you mentioned there about the Machine Gun Corps. Now, obviously for me, RTR, yeah, you know, it's where we started, mm-hmm, and everything. But I have to say, it was a regiment. We sort of, it's always when, you know, the tank came into being that we sort of concentrate our history on. So perhaps you could tell us a bit more about the pre-history of that. So from the Machine Gun Corps, because I have to say, it's not something I'm, you know, particularly conversant about.
Okay, yeah. So the Machine Gun Corps had four branches eventually: infantry, cavalry, motors, and then heavy, which is you guys. The heavy, so, and the heavy heritage comes perhaps a little bit more from the motors, but those are more seen as, you know, riding around on Vickers Kleiner motorcycles and sidecars with machine guns in the sidecar. Then you've got the cavalry and the infantry branches, which provided the machine gun support to the infantry divisions and the cavalry regiments, so, or the cavalry divs. And that was formed in 1915. So we, you know, the British Army had machine guns. You know, we've had machine guns since the 1890s. And we generally had two machine guns per battalion, which isn't that many. We hit 1914 going into the Great War thinking that the machine gun was not a sustained fire weapon, which is in the doctrine of the day. It's like, do not use this for sustained fire, which is purely down to ammunition. Actually, we can't supply, you know, they use up a lot of ammunition very quickly. So they decided to brigade everything together so that you'd have more centralised command and control. And the Machine Gun Corps was then formed in October 1915. It only lasted for 7 years. So it was disbanded in, as I said, July 1922, on the basis that all those guns can go back to the individual infantry battalions and regiments. And so it was relatively short-lived, but it left this legacy. And so for this year, for 2022, we looked at not only the existence of the Machine Gun Corps for those 7 years, but actually the legacy of that as well, because it developed machine gunnery principles, indirect fire, overhead fire, barrage fire, all those things, in just a few years of the Great War. But that's exactly what's in the doctrine and the PAMS and the tactical stuff today. So it doesn't really change. Once you get it right with small arms fire, it doesn't really change. So we looked at that legacy as well. And it's the Machine Gun Corps, you know, say the not our interest, that's wrong, because actually just for a few years, the tanks of the Tank Corps don't have Vickers machine guns in. So the Mark 1 does, the Mark 2 does, and then they don't use water-cooled Vickers machine guns. But the main armament of tanks in the 20s and 30s, and even into the start of the Second World War, are just machine guns. So you've got the Vickers 303 and the 0.5-inch that are the main armament of the light tanks and the medium tanks right up until we need stuff bigger in the Second World War. So the Machine Gun Corps and the machine gun have this intricate legacy that goes through the army all the way to today with its tactics, but then right up into the 60s. So, you know, what you'll have from the, you know, the Tank Corps and that understanding is this heavy branch piece. So it was really there to provide an umbrella unit in which to put these new weapons, because until you don't want to call the Tank Corps, if you're not trying to disclose where they're coming from. So the heavy branch sit there for, you know, just over 18 months really with tanks in service before the Tank Corps formed. Say it comes from that motors. There was the mechanical people. Where do you go and get your mechanics? Where do you go and get the people that understand how you combine mobility with firepower? You know, arguably the motor machine gun corps don't have much in the way of protection, but they do have two of those three principles. So, ideal location under which the heavy section and heavy branch to sit.
As a machine gun expert then, so here's a question for you. Now, since I started on Chieftain Challenger 1, Fishland mm-hmm. Challenger 2, now, all of the machine guns, so from, you know, the chain gun and everything, it was all really bad. I mean, they work really badly from the turret. I mean, what is the reason for this? So it seems to be like every gun we had, it was great, ground-mounted roll, worked really well. As soon as you put it into a mount somewhere in a tank, it was just like it was problems, stoppages constantly. Is, you know, where inherently is the issue with this, would you say?
Probably in just the way that the gas operation works, you know, and the frequency of use and things like that. You know, we have real problems setting up guns from a start, you know, all the time. It takes a fair bit to balance machine guns. Mm. You know, with GPMG, we balance the gas plug and everything all the time. Yeah. With the Vickers, there's a spring and a muzzle attachment to balance, certainly for blank. So so it's just setting those up. And at the end of the day, you're not machine gunners. You know, when you put them in the SF role, you know, the sustained fire role, you know, those guys are doing it all the time. It just gave machine guns to tankers and ruined the legacy that you had, perhaps.
So with the collection, I mean, when I went into your place, it was absolutely quite blown away. But where do you get? I mean, this is not something that you'd sort of pick up. Like, I totally understand the sort of private collector area.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it comes up all the time. You can, you know, you could even go on things like eBay and all the rest of it, and you'll find vehicles. But where do machine guns, you know, where do you come up for sale? Do you get people approach you or something and say, look, I found this in the attic, or...
Yeah, there aren't that many in the UK. I think it's fair to, or there aren't that many people with this, you know, permission to possess prohibited weapons.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it's quite a, not necessarily a close knit community, but there's quite a small community, and most of that stuff is film hire. You know, obviously there's a big business case for film hire and work like that. But I think it's worth saying that the UK has got a, you know, thriving defence industry. And part of that defence industry is actually small arms, but also bringing in historic small arms as well. And the UK is quite well known for some of the import and export that it does with historic small arms. And when those countries around the world that have been, you know, decommissioning or you know, putting into surplus their armouries and their arsenals, most of that stuff comes through the UK at some point. So, you know, where we as the UK have supplied many of these countries around the world through our empire days or just through sales, you know, that stuff reappears at some point or another.
You mentioned a bit about films. Have you ever been involved in any of the sort of...
No, we don't generally, because there are companies that do it much better than we do. And there's not many films that just want Vickers machine guns. There's been a couple that we've spoken about in the past to writers and stuff, but really they want something...
Do you ever watch some of them and think, oh, no, that's horrific, that's just so unrealistic, or...
All the time.
All the time.
All the time. But I don't ruin them. Yeah, it's one of those that I can see it. It's just a film. If I want to do a documentary, then absolutely, I'll do that. That's fine. But when people start swinging Vickers machine guns around, trying to chase stuff, you just go, you're not hitting anything. Like any weapon, you need to keep it in the same place all the time.
And do you ever get involved with Vickers themselves? I mean, still, you know, obviously a great part of the defence industry, of course, Vickers. I mean, do you sort of communicate with them at all, or do they ever?
We've had some conversations in the past, but never really expansive. You know, Vickers divested themselves of the small arms when they stopped making the Vickers machine gun back in 1945.
Oh, really?
Really?
Right, yeah.
Vickers were last met. The Vickers machine gun was last made in 1945. Vickers did submit some stuff to replace the GPMG. But that didn't go anywhere. So they stopped building, you know, the Vickers machine gun was the last small arm that they really, really built. And you know, GPMG with FN Mag or FN Herstal, you know, that's replaced it. You know, it'd be great to work some more on a historic side with some of those other weapons companies. And we have had some conversations with them. But I think, you know, we've got We've got a niche. We are gradually expanding that niche to understand not just how the Vickers works, but how it works alongside, or how it worked against other machine guns, and also how it worked alongside the wider British and other countries' arsenals as well. So we've got Lewis guns, Bren guns, you know, Lee Enfield rifles, pistols, and stuff like that in the collection as well, to help demonstrate that machine guns on their own, well, they're a bit like infantry on their own, a bit like tanks on their own, armour. They can't do anything. You know, it's part of that combined arms piece. So, you know, we can sit and fire a Vickers all day on the range, and all you're going to understand is the Vickers, but you don't understand that wider capability. So, you know, understanding then what was before it, potentially, what replaced it, how machine gunnery develops over time, is part of how we're looking to expand that education piece.
And you, I mean, again, going back to the vehicles, I mean, I know a lot of the private collectors struggle, obviously, as the years progress, getting spares, parts, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have exactly the same thing, I assume, for the machine guns?
Yeah, we've got about 2 tons of spares, which in vehicle terms is really small.
That's a lot for machine guns.
But it's a lot for machine guns. But it's all those bits that don't break. That's why they still exist. So we have had to make parts. We are, you know, those pieces that you know, are common breakages, you know, the most of our parts actually came out of British Army stores in the 1990s. And there was some stuff there dating back to Maxim machine guns from the 1890s. But those are all the bits that don't break very often. So that's why they were still there. Stores are for storing things, aren't they? Yeah, the bits that break will get put on the guns. We've had to make a few bits. It's quite frustrating sometimes.
Have you got a particular favourite? I'm sure you have. Every private collector has.
Probably. It is a really difficult one because I get a new favourite every so often.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, the favourite at the moment in the collection is probably a relatively recent acquisition, which is a aircraft Vickers. So it would be one that would be fitted into a plane and it actually has the interrupter gear. So it makes it, it enables it to fire between the blades of the propeller.
Right, okay.
So
wow, that's clever.
Yeah, absolutely. So you take the cleverness of a machine gun, because they are clever. Yeah, they're really intricate bits of kit that means it operates when you press a button. But then to get it to press the button and not shoot through your propeller blades, I think is just something really interesting.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's when you put, it reminds you of the inventors that were around in the late Victorian, Edwardian periods, that they put their mind to something. And these are not people that were just firearms inventors. They're not, you know, Browning is renowned for being a firearms inventor. Maxim, well, yeah, we know him for the Maxim gun, but he was a prolific inventor, like electronics, aircraft, things like that. A guy called Constantinescu was a Romanian, prolific inventor, just put his mind to how do we stop aeroplanes firing through, machine guns firing through their own propellers. So these inventors of this period are absolutely fascinating guys.
Is there a particular weapon that you haven't got that you would love to get your hands on?
I think one of those earlier Maxims. I think we're you know, gradually the collection is moving in that direction, and to have that breadth. But one of those earlier Maxims, just to start to show this is really where it came from, that would be a great addition to the collection.
And you mentioned about the collection there. I wasn't sure whether, so it's not, you said the public can actually visit the collection.
Yeah, so yeah. We hold open days or visits for groups most months. And you can find those on our website. And within that, you get sort of me talking at you for a couple of hours, but a good look around the collection. When we hold things to museum standards, so we are into our conservation and restoration, but we will allow you to handle stuff. Not the firing machine guns, but we will allow you to handle the DX and understand how, you know, the weight and where and actually how you'd carry some of this stuff. You know, why does it take 8 people to move a machine gun in the Great War and only 3 in the Second World War? And that's largely down to transport, but there's some other bits as well. You know, how heavy is an ammunition box for a Vickers? And then we'll do a blank firing demonstration for you as well. So, you know, if you've never seen a machine gun fire, really quite close up, you know, within a couple of meters of us. And for those in the room that really want to, come and be that number 2 and feed the ammunition belt and things like that, so you can understand really how close you can get to the machine guns to experience them. We'll do that, and then you'll get to see the intricacy of how you strip them and assemble them as well. So everybody thinks of a quick barrel change, and that's not,
so you must be an expert. I always think back to my army, you know, my army service, and I think it was something we didn't enjoy, stripping down machine guns and things and putting them back together. So you must be quite an expert with
I'm an expert at putting on plasters afterwards. They always make you bleed. But yeah, I suppose I am. There's probably not that many people that can strip.
What about cleaning it though, Rich? That's always something which we hated in the army, cleaning weapons.
Ultrasonic. That's the way forward.
Ultrasonic?
Ultrasonic cleaners. It was when we mash up the heritage with modern ultrasonic baths that then just use sound waves to clean stuff.
Really?
Yeah, you were missing out, Rich.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, they're relatively new, but when we put something 100 years old in them, they clean it brilliantly. I hate cleaning these guns, and we have to get them inspected before we do some of the work that we do for the Army and for the Ministry of Defence. So we'll do demonstration shoots or part of more education with different units. Obviously, Remy Armourer comes along and inspects, and he always moans at me about how I clean my weapons. It's like, they're mine. They're not the Army's. They're the associations. Yeah.
So we will add all the links, of course, to your place on there. I have to say, for anybody who's not been there, I mean, really, it is incredible.
I
was blown away the first time I went in there. I was half expecting, I don't know, sort of private collector machine guns. In the UK, you think, I don't know, like half a dozen or something, but it's certainly war to war in your place as well, and it's fascinating. And also, for people who want to learn more, I mean, prime example, I came to you the other day and we've just completed a video about the Mark IV, and of course what we didn't have was information about the machine guns, so I thought, I know just the man who could. So I know you've got a lot of research stuff as well, so you've got a lot of pamphlets, booklets, research material, etc. there, haven't you?
Yeah, so we try and put all that stuff online, actually. So most of that material, I think we've got around 400 to 500 historic PAMs. Wow. On largely on the Vickers, you know, probably two-thirds of those talk about the Vickers, but then a third of those are all of the different weapons that it was in service with. So, you know, the Lewis, the Bren, the Hotchkiss, the Lee Enfields, SLRs, Stirlings, all of that stuff through to GPMG as well. And then the tactics and vehicles that it would be in. You know, Vickers were producing everything. And in the 30s, everything that Vickers produced had a Vickers machine gun on it. You know, they were sort of selling their own stuff quite well there. Yeah, so we've put all that online. We're very much, there's two reasons for that. One, when something breaks, I don't have to get a 100-year-old pamphlet out to see how to repair it. We'll just flick through the PDF. Yeah. And we can do that anywhere. But the other is, you know, people do want to learn this stuff. People do genuinely want to understand what their grandfather, great-grandfather, you know, family relative, what they had to go through, potentially. So, you know, common one that we get when people do come up is my great whatever was on in the machine gun corps, what did he have to know? And you have to say, well, look, it's an 8-week course. We've got 20 minutes. This is, you know, we'll go through it quickly, but this is the intricacy of it. So when you do strip a lock and they go, wow, how quick were they supposed to do that? And you go, well, 40 seconds. And it's just, it really enhances people's understanding of not just the guns, but what the personnel had to go through in training as well.
Brilliant, Rich. And the future, what are the plans for the future?
So we've just had our big year is 2022. We're looking to apply for charity status, actually. We think that the public benefit is there. So that's our major step into 2023. And then just continuing taking on, the YouTube channel, the social media and everything into 2023, building on the following that we've had. So we'll do some more live firing demonstrations, more ball firing this year, more events, expand the collection. You know, that's always, it's always a collector. Yes. So although the association, I'm just one of the directors, but actually the drive in, you know, I'm still a collector at heart. I just have, you know, an association to look after it for us. Always into those more diverse areas.
I was going to say, because at the moment, I mean, if it's not a charity status, I mean, everything is what, sort of funded by people visiting you or something?
Yes.
Donations or, yeah.
Even when it will be charity status, it'll still be, you know, but at the moment it's not for profit. It's very much reliant on people coming to visit, people buying the books that we publish. We try and get some of the sort of wider machine gun stories out there. Because they're great. Yeah, we'd say that's ourselves, but actually they're great soldiers' accounts, and they're just perhaps a little bit misunderstood sometimes. That drives our funding and our income. And then we will use that to the best of our abilities to get more material online, put on demonstration shoots. You know, the shoot that we did at Bisley with the 16,000 rounds, that was funded by the association, taking on a few loans here and there, and you know, we've got a do the most that we can with the money that we've got, because yeah, we don't receive any funding from anywhere else.
Brilliant. Rich, thank you firstly for keeping history alive. As you know, we're always massive fans of that. And we'll put all the links for everybody up there. So, and again, you know, please, all of you listening in here, please support the association. And that's about it from us. Thank you so much to Rich for joining us. And until next time, take care.